Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today we're talking to Matt Kent, who's a great writer and artist and has given us such wonderful works as Three Story from Dark Horse, Super Spy from Top Shelf, and his latest effort for Vertigo Comics, Revolver. We talked to Matt about his process and about the new book, Revolver, and what his plans are for this week's San Diego Comic-Con. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you get up to 35% off your favorite hardbacks, trade paperbacks, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, including many works by Matt Kent. And don't forget, if you make any orders of $50 or over, it's free shipping from InStockTrades.com. For example, how about Super Spy from Top Shelf? A great book that has 52 short stories involving spy stuff from the Cold War. You're going to love it. The standard retail price is $19.95. InStockTrades.com's price, $13.97. But do yourself a favor, add on the Lost Dossiers graphic novel, because that has standalone spy stories, deleted scenes, great sketchbook pages, 3D comics, plus diagrams of spy gadgets, and keys to unlock secret codes that are hidden through the original Super Spy graphic novel. So it really is like getting the bonus DVD if you get Lost Dossiers. The standard retail price is $12.95 at InStockTrades.com, $9.07. You can get today's book that we discussed, Revolver, also available through InStock Trades. The standard retail price is $24.99, but at InStockTrades.com, $15.74. Don't forget about their site, Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order monthly magazine needs. You'll find amazing discounts there as well. Check out their websites to believe it. Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com, InStock Trades at instocktrades.com. Well, let's just dive right in and talk about Revolver. Okay. First, I'll ask you, how did you get the chance to do something with Vertigo?
It was one of those things, you know. I'd been reading Vertigo books since 1990, I guess. And I've always loved them. But it was one of those things where as I got into the industry and I sort of looked at what my books were like, I never felt like it was a real good fit for me, you know. It's something I was always a fan of, but never. I was like, well, I don't know that that's me. I don't know if I have Vertigo material. But then over the years, you know, I've had a couple of new books come out, and I've met a lot more editors, and I did have an idea that I was like, well, it could be a Top Shelf book, it could be a Dark Horse book, but it seemed like it was more of a Vertigo book. So I had that and a couple other things. I just pitched to Bob Schreck when he was still there, and he picked Revolver. He thought it was a good fit. I was like, well, I think it's a good fit, too.
Very cool. Now, was he the editor through the full process, or because he left the company, did you end up switching to another editor?
Yeah, no, he left kind of in the middle of it, so I got it was given to Joan Hilty.
Fantastic.
And she was fantastic. So I was a little worried. I hadn't really talked to her before, and then I got to talking to her, and it was just great. So I tell everybody I was sad to see Bob go, but I was lucky in that I got to work with him and Joan.
Yeah, and certainly Schreck's reputation speaks for itself. A lot of comic fans know all the big projects that he's worked on in the past. And Joan, I know through people like Greg Rucka and Jen Van Meter how much they really love working with her when she was with DC. And then I remember when she made the move to Vertigo. And I've yet to meet her, and I haven't really been keeping up on which specific Vertigo properties she runs, but I know that she has an eye for the kind of stories that I like, and it doesn't surprise me. I think you guys are a good fit, and certainly specifically for this story. So very cool.
Yeah, no, it all worked out. It's been great.
Give people the 5-second pitch in terms of the plot of Revolver, and then we'll get into some of the nitty gritty.
Okay, sounds good. It's a guy who wakes up one day, goes to work, a job he hates, and the world kind of ends, sort of falls apart around him, and he has to sort of struggle just to get out of the building, let alone out of the city, and try to survive, and he escapes with his boss, who he hates, and so they have to sort of struggle to survive, and then he goes to bed that night, he wakes up the next morning, he's back in the regular world, everything's back to normal, he's at his day job, and he's wondering what the heck's going on, and he's hating life, and he doesn't know what to do, so he goes to bed that night, and then through the whole book, it just flips back and forth. So he has memory of everything, but he's flipping back and forth day to day from end of the world to normal everyday job. and crazy things start happening in the end of the world thing, and he gets to take the memories of all of that into this normal world and figure out how to deal with all of it.
It's very cool. I like the whole parallel universe device, and I think you take it one step further with a very interesting crawl of 24-hour news kind of information that's going on from page to page. And I thought that was an interesting touch and certainly informs the flavors of both worlds.
Yeah, that was one of the things. You know, I have almost every book, I have enough material. I could do 1,000 pages of comics. But reading that, I think it just would have been bad. You know, like part of the writing is self-editing or sort of deciding what you're going to focus on and what the book's going to be about, you know. So that was just one of those things where I had a bunch of different little subplots and all this other stuff happening that I felt sort of distracted from the main storyline by the time I got done with it. And so I just put it at the bottom with the page numbers.
Well, I love it because, and I have to assume that maybe you felt the same way, the world cataclysm that is depicted in the book is very different from, say, a 9/11. And in fact, with our recent scares of bird flu and pig flu and all those swine flu and all those things, I think people will see, you know, flavors of that. But it reminded me in a lot of ways of the post 9/11 feeling, because so much of it obviously was concentrated in New York. And you're in St. Louis, I'm in Chicago, and we all, I think, you know, obviously the entire country was affected by 9/11 to a degree, but there was this kind of weird, almost parallel existence of what we were going through with our normal days and what was truly happening at Ground Zero.
Yeah, it's definitely a disconnect there, you know, from what you see on the news and what you do every day. It's like, how do you go from, like, how do you go from one thing to the other? It's kind of hard to do. And I did. I had a problem with that when, after 9/11, I would work all day. I'd come home and just watch the news until I fell asleep. And it kind of drove me crazy after a while. It's like, I'm working all day here, and then I come home, and then I watch all this on the news. And I'd stop watching TV after, like, a month after 9/11. I stopped watching TV because I couldn't do it. I couldn't do the news and all that.
Sure.
I couldn't take it anymore. But that was the thing too with the book. Like I don't know that I don't know what I have to say about 9/11. I didn't want it to really be a 9/11 book, but that was one of those things where I guess it's terrible to say, but I'm a fan of the end of the world genre.
I understand.
So while there's all the echoes of 9/11 to me, it's just, that was like a small. It was like a little window into what it would really be like. Like as terrible as it was, it was one moment to give you a window into what, like, a real end of the world thing could be, you know.
Sure. Well, and further, and I think this is kind of one of the things that you explore is, we are bombarded by the images of what is happening in the world through television. And being somebody that comes from the media and my radio background, this is what I took from reading the book, that in a lot of ways, every individual can be as engaged or as disengaged as they choose, and really allow the world that surrounds you to inform your personal life, you know, as much or as little as you choose. And it seems like that's kind of the theme of the book.
Yeah, you know, I would say that's probably one of them. I like when I go into a book, I'm not thinking about what it's going to be about or what the theme is and everything. It is one of those things where you decide, like when I was younger, I feel like I was really motivated. It's like, I want to make a difference. I'm going to design these posters. And I would make these little, flyers that I would take to the mall and like plant in like Dillard's and Fame Star and like sort of like anti-consumerism sort of tracks. Like almost for fun. I was like, I'm going to do this. And then just get people to sort of change the way they think about things. And so I did that for a while, and then as I got older, I'm like, man, I'm too old for that. That takes too much energy. And then what's the point of that? But so I sort of got away from that a little bit. But you watch politics, and I'm like, well, I don't know how much can one person do. But then at the same time, it's like if everybody thinks that, then nothing will ever get done, or nothing will change. So it's sort of a weird, sort of in the middle there on what I think.
Well, and I also think that there's just a lot of commentary on really the outside world. It just feels like, you know, pop culture and mass media and the power of influence over your life. I mean, that seems to be another kind of, you know, one of the other ideas that are explored in the book.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things, too, is as I get older, I feel like, or I get more busy, I guess. There's more movies and TV shows and books that I want to read than I'll ever get to, and it does kind of drive me crazy after a while. I'm like, man, I don't, like, at what point do I, you know, what am I going to do tonight? Sometimes there's so much stuff I want to do or consume that I get sort of paralyzed. I'm like, well, I want to play this video game, and I want to watch this movie, and I need to get that book read. And I have, like, 4 or 5 hours before I'll get too tired. I don't know what to do, and I don't do anything. And I'm looking at Facebook, you know.
Like, now, you're married, right?
Yeah, I'm married, and I have a 7-year-old daughter, too, so...
Oh, my God, there you go. Well, yeah, and I can only imagine. You see, being single, I kind of live the Uncle Buck life. And I do, yeah. And I feel for my married friends who really do love, you know, film buffs and do like good television and do enjoy good books. And it is tough once you have a kid. And certainly at 7, I'm sure she's at activity age and everything too.
Yeah, no, it's just, and it's different. And you can sort of bend it.
Oh, sure.
To what you want or what you need.
Well, do you what are you you know, are you working full time in comics, or do you still have a day job, or?
No, I'm doing, it's full-time comics.
Attaboy.
I do it all day, and we have family close too, so they'll watch my daughter while we work. And then when school starts, it's even easier.
How much of Revolver did you have figured out? I mean, really, what is your process? Are you, you know, I mean, do you start with an outline and you're kind of filling in as you go, or are you really kind of, let's see where this story takes me?
Yeah, you know, I always start out with, let's see where it's going to take me, but usually that stage is just, like, bullet point ideas I'm writing in my sketchbook, and then eventually I'll get enough of those ideas that I can sort of develop into, like, a full story. And I do, I'll end up, like, typing up, like, a two-page, basically what you use as a pitch, like a two-page. Here's kind of who the characters are, here's basically what's going to happen. And so from there, I usually take that, and then... it's almost different with every book, but I usually tend to just type out, like, a longer version of that, like an 80-page description of everything that's going to happen. Like, the characters go here, they do this, they do that. It's almost like I'm just telling you the story. So that's, like, the second or third stage. And then I take that, and then I do thumbnails of the whole book. So with the Revolver, that's kind of how it was, right? And this book was a little bit different in that they actually gave me a page count I had to stick to. I couldn't go over, whatever, 190 pages. So,
wow, okay.
We'll give you 190 pages. I'm like, okay, I will fill every one of those. I think it was actually 160. And then when I was working on it, I was like, well, I need at least 30 more. So they gave me 30 more pages. So having that definitely made me tighten up at the beginning, and just make sure I have space to do everything I want to do.
Do you feel like you're...
I do. I'll thumbnail the whole book out in, like, 2x3-inch pages. I thumbnail the whole thing out. So by the time I'm done with that, I know exactly what the book is. Like, I can flip through and basically tell you everything that's going to be said, and there's no guesswork left after that.
You know, it seems like with every project, going back to things like Pistol Whip and Super Spy... That, and through Three Story and even now, that your art keeps changing a little bit. I mean, what did you, and in fact, we talked a little bit about this at C2E2, about Revolver and everything, and I asked you if you felt like your art was changing. Is that a conscious move from book to book, or did you just feel like your art's evolving as you go anyway?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to always evolve no matter what I do, just because when you draw 200 or 300 pages, You're a different artist at the end of those pages. And it's going to be different anyway. And I do, like, I go back and look at my old books, and there's things that bother me, and I usually, there's a couple things in the back of my mind, as I start a new book, where I'm like, things I think I need to work on, or things I want to try, or things that I want to do a little differently. So yeah, I'll always go in and I'll be like, well, this time I'm going to do, I don't know what, I think I drew a lot more cars than Revolver. Yeah. I'm a pretty lazy artist. I joke about it with my friend Brian Hurt, who's here in town.
Sure.
I'm not going to ever do a story that has horses or a lot of cars or dogs and cats. So, those are the things I hate to draw. But I think, but then there's part of me that's just perverse enough to do a book that only has that stuff in it too, so to make myself do it. But that was one of those things with the Revolver. I think the art is different just because I'm evolving anyway, but then the art is different because it's set in modern day. It's the first book I've done that's set in, modern time.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it was different. I had to get all new reference, because all my references stops at like the 60s. I never drew a car that was newer than the 60s, so that was, I had to go out and buy a bunch of books and get some models and stuff. So it was a hassle.
Well, but that's another thing that I like about your kind of storytelling, and it was fun to see you jump to this modern era, because Pistol Whip is very informed by your love of radio. And,
yeah.
You know, and Super Spy has such wonderful examples, as well as Pistol Whip, too. And so does Three Story, of newspaper clippings. And, you know, you use the media of the era and the communicative media of the era. And that's, I think that's really neat. And that's what I like about Revolver, too, that you make that further leap of, you know, today's 24-hour news cycle. And it's really fun to kind of see you play in this modern world in the same way, and obviously with the same intensity that you see in these other books.
Yeah, that's great. It was fun to do that, and I do, like, part of it is I think you help build the world or set the scene for the world to make it a little more real. So depending on what the era is, it is fun to do that, and I do. I love the old radio shows, and I love all that stuff. And then so I can't do radio show stuff in modern day.
Well, no, definitely.
That seems strange, but that was what was fun to me. I got to do the news ticker thing, which doesn't really work in any other era. And then I just had some ideas about, like, one of the ideas in the book that I had, and I couldn't do it in a different time period, was this whole idea of, you know, sort of this modern society sort of rolling on with its head cut off, where you're getting phone calls from robotic creditors, you know.
Yes.
Asking, you know, if you paid your bill yet. After the world ended, like, they're standing on rubble and he's getting a phone call from his credit card company, you know, telling him he's late on his payment. And I mean, I just, you know, that can't do that in the 40s. But, it feels a little weird.
Well,
but it's awesome. So to me, it was fun to be able to do some stuff like that I couldn't do before. You know?
I always think that, and I wonder sometimes, especially people like you and Chaikin and other creators that really do enjoy Cloak and Dagger stories in particular of the old days. And I had this conversation with Rucker just a few months ago, and we talked about how things we take for granted as story plot devices, like listening in on a phone call or putting a trace on somebody, the technology was so different. Creating a fake ID. I mean, just little things like that. In fact, about Darwin Cook's adaptation of the Parker books that he's been doing. You know, you read those novels of the early 60s, and it was nothing for a guy back, you know, in the pre-computerized world to make a fake driver's license.
Right.
And get away with it and kind of, you know, be able to slip around in another state and not really have anybody bat an eye. Try it today. I mean, it's those kinds of differences that pose different problems on how you're able to achieve the same effect.
Yeah, definitely. Like I don't know if you read the book Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
That guy, like, he couldn't do that now. You know, it's like,
absolutely.
Everything. And so it is interesting, you know, it changes what your story is going to be, and just makes new hurdles, but then it presents new kind of strange opportunities too.
Absolutely. Oh, I think you're going to follow up with strange opportunities to do something. Do you are you going to be seeing Inception in the next few weeks when it comes out?
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine had a preview, like a
screener.
And I did, but I didn't go because I didn't have time. I'm getting ready for San Diego, and I didn't have time to go. Oh, I'm so bummed out. So I'm hoping to see it in San Diego, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if and you know, you're it's one hour as we're recording, we're about a week away from San Diego, and you're leaving early. And I know you're gonna have a good time. You said you're gonna hit some baseball in L.A. before you go out to San Diego. So that's cool.
Yeah, I'm spending the week in L.A. and I'm gonna see the Dodgers and I guess see Inception.
What day is your signing?
The signing, in L.A., the signing is on Monday at Skylight Books in L.A.
Terrific. Okay, great, because I'm going to try it. We're recording Thursday night, and for people listening, and you might be getting this recording as it, you know, comes out on Friday morning, you'll have time to make plans if you're in the L.A. area. So, again, say, is Skyline Books? Where is it?
Skylight Books in L.A. It's 7 p.m., and I don't know what the address is or anything. But
well, that's what Google's for. That's all right. Skylight Books. Monday night, 7 p.m., Matt's doing a signing. That's terrific.
Yeah, that should be fun. I'm going to actually do a reading. It's my first reading I've ever done. So.
Oh, that's great.
Slideshow together. And that's the other thing I was doing all day, was trying to figure out how to do a slideshow where I'm reading with the slides. And that. Like, that's a different art form. I was doing that, and I'm like, well, this isn't comics even. This is like a sort of a multimedia thing. It's not even comics with me reading it and showing images. It's something else.
Are you gonna pick a scene where, you know, he's by himself, or are you gonna pick a scene where you're gonna have somebody else reading the woman's part? Or
initially I thought I'd have two microphones set up, so I would just walk from one to the other. What world he was in, you know. And then but I haven't been to the store. I don't know how it's set up, so I thought that might be too much trouble.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I saw Dean Haspiel perform a reading in Chicago a few months ago. And, yeah, he kind of asked a girl to volunteer and do the female part. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, yeah, it was really neat. It was very, very neat. That's terrific. And actually, I should tell you, because do you know Gabe Hardman, Gabriel Hardman?
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Gabe's Jeff Parker's artist on Agents of Atlas currently.
Oh, okay.
And he's going to be at San Diego. And he was a storyboard artist on Inception.
So maybe
we'll run into you and stuff, and we can talk about Inception and everything. But yeah, he's
cool.
He'll be at San Diego as well. So yeah, getting all the clicks together and stuff. Is Brian coming to San Diego this year?
Yeah, he's coming. We're sharing a hotel room, so him and Colin Bunn.
Oh, fantastic! Very good. I should ask now: Are you up for an Eisner for Three Story?
I am not. I don't. No, I'm not. I would have heard. No.
Okay. Yeah, you would have. I could remember.
Yeah, I would have heard by now. No.
All right. That's cool. Well, you know, and certainly the book has been so well received. I should ask about your plans at San Diego first. What will you be doing as far as panels or signings and stuff?
Yeah, I have there's a Vertigo panel I'm doing on Friday, I think, on the Esme and Jeff Lemire and a couple of the other guys.
Cool.
And I'm just signing. I'm signing at Dark Horse, signing at Top Shelf, and I'm signing at the DC booth, too. So I'll be jumping around pretty much all weekend.
Excellent. Very, very good. And, you know, everyone's adored Three Story, man. It's a heartbreaking story about a giant man. And it's certainly not a Hank Pym story, or I can't think of it. Well, I guess what's the Legionnaire of Legion of Superheroes? Is it Giant Boy? No.
Oh, yeah, who's...
The hell's his name? Colossal Boy.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very different. And a very sad story, man. In a good way.
Yeah, I hope there's a ray of light at the end. I tried to put like a little happiness at the very, very end. Like on the very last page, but I don't know if people get that. People are pretty much bummed out by the time they get to the last page.
But no, all your books are very different. And, you know, man... Super Spy was the first book of yours that hooked me in, and then you were kind enough to give me Pistol Whip, and I certainly enjoyed that as well. You know, you hit the good thing about Revolver is I would say that if people really enjoy, and that's why I brought up Inception, it's got that kind of modern, you know, chase. You know, it really does. It's actually, I would say, it's a good compliment to I think what's going to be one of the big summer movies in terms of if they like that kind of story. It's not so much in the science fiction-y, well, I don't even know, but I guess, because I was going to say, not so much in the dream sense, but actually very much so in the dream sense. This dream world is a real world in a different way, though. And I think, there's a like-mindedness to it, and I don't mean to say that one is stealing from the other at all, it's good. You know, you come out of a movie and you kind of are interested in that kind of story. And I would say that for people that are excited for Inception, they should pick up Revolver, and I think they'll find a very entertaining story there, too.
Well, that's good. It makes me excited. So you saw the movie already?
I have not seen the movie yet. I've certainly seen the trailers, and talking to people like Gabe who worked on the film, everybody's up for it. And, you know, it's Chris Nolan. I mean, really, what has there been a bad Christopher Nolan movie?
No, there hasn't. No, I'm so excited. That's the thing. I don't want to hear anything about it. I'm trying to avoid anything. I saw the trailer once and try not to watch it again.
No, I understand. And the other thing, too, is on Twitter the other night, I was talking about On Her Majesty's Secret Service being on TV, and Gabe chimed in and said, oh, you know, if you're a big Bond fan, you're going to really like Inception, and that's all he said. And then I happened to see an ad for the movie, like in a newspaper, that it said, you know, a quote was, it's like James Bond meets The Matrix. And I'm like, works for me.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah, like everything I like put together.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, I am very excited about it and stuff. And speaking of Chris Nolan, we should be timely with news. I don't know if you caught this today, but apparently they've announced a production schedule finally for the third Batman movie.
Oh, good, good.
So that's cool. We got that going for us, you know. Are you, you know, now that this, I know this book is just coming out, but are there other plans for you at Vertigo?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I have something into him. I'm waiting to hear on it. And I have a... The next book I'm doing is actually done. I did a book for Oni called The Tooth with Cullen Bunn. And it's sort of like a 70s Marvel horror comic.
Oh, very cool.
It's kind of a great book. You know, I was like, I need to do a fun book that is just kind of funny. So I worked on that. That's done. And then I'm doing a book for First Second called The Strange Crimes of Red Wheelbarrow, which will be out in 2012, I guess.
2012 or 2011?
2012. It's
okay.
It'll be done next year, but their publishing schedule is a little different. We have to have it done like a year ahead of time, so they can do all the marketing and everything. So.
Okay, and that's First Second. You said is publishing that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell me about two, because is this the first time that you'll be working with another creator?
On the two, the book that was Sean Lee and Cullen Bunn co-wrote that, and it was one of those things where. Like, I travel a lot with Brian Hurt, and then
sure.
Colin, and then we'll go to shows together, and he...
Colin, of course, wrote The Damned with Brian doing the art.
Yeah, yeah, and they got the new one, Six Gun.
Six Gun, yes.
That's really good, but...
Yes, indeed.
You travel with him, and he's got, like, more hilarious story ideas than anybody I know. Like, I can't even repeat them. Like, some of them are just so funny that... And one of them was this one called The Tooth, about this... ancient warrior that sort of turns into a tiny tooth and jumps into a guy's mouth and then jumps out and battles evil, kind of like the Hulk, but as a tooth. It's so bizarre. But the way he describes it was so funny. I was like, man, if I ever get some time, I'd love to draw that book. So, yeah, I was coming off of the free story book, and I was like, man, I need something fun to do. Because I guess the book did bum me out.
Oh,
I can't blame people. But I was like, I need to do something fun. So that was sort of like my break in between Free Story and Revolver.
Oh, that's funny. Well, how long is The Tooth?
Gosh, it's about probably 160 pages.
Interesting. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because I always wondered if I had offended Jeff Lemire, because I was talking to him about Essex County and Sweet Tooth. And I'm like, Jeff, don't you like any happy stories?
Yeah. No, I get in trouble all the time. I'm like, what DC book are they going to put you on? Superboy, so you can be sad and feel like Kansas, you know? And then what did they do? They gave him Superboy.
There you go. Did you read his Adam?
I haven't read it yet. No.
It's great. It really is great. And I, you know, as soon as it came out and I read it, I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to let him know, because I haven't had a chance to talk to him directly since we did our interview. And let it off. Like, dude, this is fantastic. And no, I was really happy when I heard he got Superboy, because, yeah, if anybody gets, like, growing up on a farm and what it's like, you know, living at that pace and stuff, I definitely think it's Lemire. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I, like, them putting him on that book kind of is exciting to me because he's coming from a different place. And
definitely.
So I would love to see what he does in Superboy. I think it's going to be great. And actually, Dad, he sent me, like, his rough outline for his ideas, and it's going to be totally awesome.
Very cool. And, you know, honestly, I would say the same about you. I'm hoping that this, you know, entry to Vertigo will allow you a chance to maybe get involved with DC's mainstream. I don't know if you have any, you know, ambition to do any of their heroes or anything.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm not opposed to it, and I do. I have a Legion of Superheroes story idea that I have to do before I die.
Okay.
It's just a matter of putting it together and getting a pitch to them. It's tough because I have a lot of projects I'm doing right now, and unless somebody asks me to do it, then I'm not going out and looking for it. So if they ask me, I wouldn't turn it down, but I'm not actively seeking it at this time. This is the first time in my career where I have 3 books completely written and laid out. I have the thumbnails all done, everything for 3 separate books, and I just have to start drawing on it. So I might be busy for like another year.
Okay, and is it too early to talk about any of those books?
No, I don't. It's the first, second book, the Strange Crimes book, and that's like, pages. It's probably pushing 300 pages. And then I'm doing another one called End of the World. it's sort of a story about a family. It's basically my wife, me, and our daughter as we travel across the country after the world's ended. But it's sort of like we have a good time with it. There are sad moments. I'm not saying there's not sad moments, but there's more fun than there is badness because there's no, like, it's not one of those things where it's about what caused it or all this horrendous death and destruction. It's more about, well, what would I do if everybody had just sort of disappeared and then you could just go into Best Buy and grab all the movies you wanted, you know, that kind of thing.
That's like you're the modern day Burgess Meredith in that Twilight Zone, man. You just want to sit down and read everything.
Right, exactly. That's definitely part of it. But that's going to be a big one. That one's, it's going to be 3 200-page volumes. They're going to do it in 3 books.
Holy cow. Wow.
Pretty huge.
Who's publishing that?
Oni's doing that one.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. It's just crazy. You'll see it.
No, I look forward to it. I think that's really terrific. Unbelievable, man. And, you know, how long did Revolver take you to do?
Gosh, it probably took me maybe 6 or 8 months to do that.
Okay.
But that doesn't count, like, taking notes and the story, all the preliminary story stuff. Like, just from typing a full script out to finishing the inks is probably 6 to 8 months.
And I've seen you at cons do incredibly finished sketches that, honestly, at the time, I thought, you know, could easily have been panels in things like Super Spy and Pistol Whip and Three Story. So, you know, I don't know as far as, you know, pages and stuff, how quickly you can, once you've got the ideas mapped out, as you say, you know, how fast you can really crank out pages.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, once I get the longest part really is, like, layout and figuring that out, and then everything else is kind of production in a way. Like I it doesn't take long.
What do you listen to when you're do you do it in silence? Do you have music going on? What do you listen to when you're working?
Oh yeah, I listen to everything. I try to download like a few albums before I start.
Okay.
Because if I don't, then I'll just listen to whatever that first album, the last album was. I'll just keep listening to it over and over again. Cash for Revolver. I downloaded some Miles Davis, Bitches Brew. I'd never heard that before.
Oh, fantastic.
I heard Miles Davis, and then I was like, man, that's like one of his most famous.
Absolutely.
I listened to that a bunch, and then this other band, the Black Keys, do you know them?
Yes, I do.
They, a couple of their albums, man, I think I probably mostly listened to that.
Very cool.
Those are good.
Yeah, that's excellent. And I should ask, and I don't know if we've ever, like, gone into the nitty-gritty, but I, as you know, because we've discussed it. I'm a big old-time radio fan, and I'm always happy to hear the comic creators that are into old radio. And I know David Peterson is into that stuff. I know Brian Hurd is into that stuff as well. Yeah. So which old-time radio shows are you a fan of?
How long it's been since I've listened to one?
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I know. It's been so long. I don't even know. Like, when I was listening to them, it was like The Shadow was awesome.
Sure.
I think The Shadow is kind of my favorite.
Like, that's cool.
The ones I still have, I still save my CDs. I have them in case they get messed up on my laptop. But,
you know, the guy who created the Golden Age Green Lantern Oath, Alfred Bester, wrote a few Shadow scripts.
Oh, yeah?
And, of course, much better known for his science fiction writing.
Right, right.
The Stars My Destination and all that. But, yeah, he wrote a few of the early 40s Shadow scripts, yeah?
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. The thing I like about those, to me, the way they relate to comics, and it's one thing I want to do, is I do want to do, like, a monthly comic. Before I die, I want to do a book that comes out every month.
Okay.
It's such a different art form. It is more like radio, where you have these serialized. It has to be satisfying for that little chunk of whatever, 22 pages, or and then it has to satisfy, but also sort of leave you wanting that next issue.
Definitely.
To me, that's a different art form than everything I've done so far, which is basically just self-contained books. Where I don't have to worry as much about the pacing or that kind of thing. And I think even like modern TV shows are a lot like that too, where, it gives you a satisfying piece of something bigger.
But I would say that like books like Super Spy in particular really had those kind of vignettes, and many of them absolutely could have stood on their own and been little short stories.
Yeah. And I when I was doing that book, it was really important to me that each one of those chapters could be on its own. You pull it out of the book, it works by itself.
Absolutely.
And I think, yeah, with a monthly book, to me, it's a little bit trickier because you want it to be like that. You also want, there to be a little bit of a tease for,
what's coming next month?
Or the next bigger thing,
Sure.
So anyway, that'd be fun. I hope I get to do it.
Very cool. What of your works are available digitally?
I have no idea. That's one of the things the publishers take care of that, and I just don't know. So
okay.
I don't have an iPad. I don't read them that way.
So I was going to ask if have you explored that yet or not.
No, I got the Comixology app on my phone, and I tried a couple of those. It's probably better on the iPad, but for the phone, I don't know. I like holding my comics still.
Oh, I can appreciate that. I'll be interested when you finally, if you have a chance to play with an iPad, because I pretty much felt the same way until guys like Mike Norton and Brian Salazar had their iPads and showed me some books. And I got to say that, A, the page isn't that much smaller than a regular comic book page. And also, I have to say, it was a different experience, but it was kind of nice. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it, and to me it's just a matter of finding the time, because once I find enough time to do it, I want to do. The thing with the electronic comics is that if I'm going to do one, I want to design it to be that. Like, I want it to do...
Sure.
I want it to work on that iPad, and I want it to do something that's not going to work in the book version.
Absolutely.
And so eventually I will find the time, and I'll buy one, just so I can, and then make a story that fits only on it, so that I can write it off on my taxes.
I can understand that, absolutely. As far as making some of your other books, how involved are you on the production end?
Super involved. I do pretty much everything. The Revolver is one of the exceptions because they have all their in-house people all set.
Sure.
I did the cover on that, but then that's the first time I really let go of like all the front and back pages. And they did a really good job on it. It felt weird giving it up. I probably won't do it again. But
that's fine. Well, and that's what I was wondering about collaborating. And obviously, Cullen's a friend. But yeah, I was almost wondering if the opportunity to be paired with somebody through a publisher were to come up, as opposed to like you said, I'm assuming that you, the reason why you did the tooth with Colin was you really enjoyed the idea. Was the idea of the story.
I wouldn't say no to it. It has to be pretty unique though.
Understood.
There's part of me that I just had to turn off part of my personality or part of me to do the tooth because I could get along with Colin. You know, that was one of those things where like I still want to be his friend when we're done with it. So to do that, I had to just let him do the writing, and it was kind of hard to do. So I don't know. I don't know how often I'll do that.
I understand that, and you know, honestly, I think that's the kind of benefit and curse of being the double threat and everything. You're a strong writer and you're a strong artist.
And yeah, I enjoy both. Yeah,
you know exactly, and I think you succeeded both. So that's, I think, yeah, I can appreciate kind of like, oh, I don't know if I want to take second chair on this element of the story when you're, you know, capable of doing it yourself.
Yeah, that's the thing. And if I was going to do anything, I'd probably give up the art and do the writing. But then I would feel bad for whoever the artist was. I feel like I would be, I don't know, I think I'd be rough on them.
I understand. Yeah, no, and again, the detail that you put into your books, I think shows. And Revolver is another one of those books. I mean, that's the thing. And as you say, I think this is the kind of story that it reads well more than once. And I think you do get more out of it each time you read it. So
I hope it does work. Like every book I do, I try to make it something where you, like, you can get it all the first time, but maybe there's extra stuff in there that benefit from a second reading. Only because, like, when I'm reading a book, comic books read so quickly. You know, like, even my favorite books, they don't last long enough to me. So anything I can do to make it there be a little more to it, I think, has always been one of my goals.
Very cool. Excellent, man. Well, you know, the book is just out this week. How's the feedback been so far?
It's been really great. I've been really happy. The reviews are good, and just people coming in. I did a signing yesterday, and a couple of people went, read it, and then came back after lunch and talking about it. It was kind of exciting. So nice to finally get feedback on a book that kind of has been done. For me, it's been done for a while, so it's exciting.
Excellent, man. Well, I know you're going to, I'm sure you're going to hear more good feedback in L.A., and then a couple days later in San Diego, so bask in the glow.
Yep, thanks.
Absolutely. And really, yeah, the book is out now. It's Revolver. It's from Matt Kent from Vertigo. And we look forward to more things on the way. The Tooth with him and Cullen Bunn. And then first, second project coming up in 2012. And then, of course, the other Oni project that you've got buzzing. So maybe we'll see that in 2011, or you don't know?
Yeah, you know, the first volume probably will be sometime next year. Yeah.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right, man. Well, I look forward to seeing you in San Diego. I appreciate your time, and thanks for hanging.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you next weekend.
That's Matt Kent. Don't forget, if you're in the L.A. area, check out Skylight Books tonight at 7:30 p.m. because Matt will be there signing Revolver, and I'm sure he'll sign some of his other books as well. But check out the signing, and if not, look for Matt at San Diego Comic-Con this coming week. This episode of Word Balloon was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where they have a great selection of books, all at 35% off or more from the cover price. And in fact, you can find great values involving our friend Matt Kent. Example, his new book, Revolver. The standard retail price is $24.99 at InStockTrades.com, $15.74. You can also get Super Spy. You can pick that up as a trade paperback. The standard retail price for that is $19.95 at InStockTrades.com, $13.97. Don't forget about the Lost Dossier graphic novel. Standard retail price $12.95, InStockTrades.com, $9.07. Or Three Story, The Secret History of a Giant Man. Standard retail price is $19.95 for that Dark Horse book at InStockTrades.com, $12.97. The discounts are waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks for listening. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. You can find us at iTunes. Please subscribe to our feed and check out, and don't miss a single episode, in addition to catching up on our back catalog as well. If you'd like to leave a review for us and ratings at iTunes, I certainly would appreciate it. And any questions or comments about the show, there's several ways to contact me. Through Facebook under my name, John Suntress, at Twitter under John Word Balloon. You can email me, john@wordballoon.com, Or if you want, you can just come to wordballoon.com, click on the link to our message board over at Jinx World, and ask me a question in the thread section. We are days away from the San Diego Comic-Con, and Word Balloon will be there. And don't forget, I'll be involved with several panels. First up, on Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., the 5th Annual Comics Podcasting Panel. I'll be there along with Josh Flanagan from iFanboy, Jimmy Aquino from Comic News Insider, Pants from Comic Geek Speak, Bob Breedall from The Comic Book Page, and Cameron Hathaway from Cammy's Comic Corner. Make sure you check it out. It's in room 32AB. Friday from 12:30 to 1:30, there's a spotlight on the Immamen, Sex, Lies, and Comic Books. Catherine and Stuart are going to be there with me for the hour, and we'll be talking about working for Marvel, Top Shelf, and a new work in process. Check that out on Friday from 12:30 to 1:30 in room 9. And then on Saturday, I will be happy to MC the spotlight on Brian Michael Bendis. We'll be doing a live Bendis tapes right there. Bendis will be giving away limited edition variant covers of his new creator-owned series, Scarlet. That's happening in room 6DE, Saturday from 12:30 to 1:30. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.